Chandra Om has spent her life in service to humanity, disseminating the ancient knowledge of how to achieve radiant health and spiritual development through the science of classical yoga. She is the founder and director of the North Carolina School of Yoga and the senior teacher and disciple of Sri Dharma Mitra. She is the author of 3 critically acclaimed CDs and the book Dharma Mitra, A Friend to All. After years of being a teacher to the yoga teachers and a celebrated and much respected teacher in her own guru's ashram, in 2008 Chandra was recognized by Yoga Journal as one of the top yoga teachers in the world. Her teacher trainings are attended by yogis from all over the world and are designed from years of practices that Chandra did herself to become a yogi. Each student is prescribed spiritual programs that drastically charge and change their life to become a calm, content, and better person. These yoga teachers, through Chandra's guidance, become much more than just teachers. They become yogis. Chandra is a beloved teacher and a rare gem in the world of yoga today, known for her humility, humor, joy, and kindness in teaching. Still teaching in the traditional way, students from all walks of life flock to her classes and are guided to a state of complete surrender and contentment, merging complete identity with the true self, the ultimate goal of yoga. In the following interview, Chandra answers questions on the connection between the body and mind, pranayama, the belief in God, mantra, and the guru-disciple relationship. Enjoy. It's wonderful to see you again.
Nice to see you.
First, I'd just like to say congratulations on being chosen by Yoga Journal for being one of the top 20 yoga teachers under 40. That's a great honor and really a testament to your service and all that you have to give and all that you allow to come through you. So I'd like to congratulate you first on that. A lot of the teachings, the initial teachings, deal with the body, whether they're prescriptions for diet, for asana, for pranayama. What is the relationship between the body and mind? Why do they have such a intimate relationship with one another that one can affect the other so directly?
Well, because they are one and the same. They are both part of the material realm. Anything involved in the material realm is truly truly all the same. It's just different states of consciousness. Some minds are of a higher consciousness, some bodies are higher consciousness. The prana and the blood are traveling at a higher level of consciousness. In some others, a bit low. But in reality, it's all one and the same. There's really no separation between mind and body, and the purpose of the purification practices involved in the science of yoga are preliminary. They're not to become hypnotized. It's like many people, they get very distracted by the hatha practices. They become very hypnotized in that it should feel good, and that if it does not feel good, don't do it. They become lost in the physical sensations. But then you see that immediately one day when they cannot do something, maybe if you're doing the hatha practices, that's a very forceful practice. That's one of the literal translations. And so you're going to feel some things. You're going to feel me, because I'm doing the hatha exercises. I always feel something. I always feel a pain here, always something. But eventually it all goes away. You must learn inside of the yogic system not to become distracted and preoccupied with the body and mind. You must not become hypnotized. That is a mortal person. A mortal person walking around, you're perceiving the reality through the physical senses. And so if you cannot experience it through the five senses or the more subtle three, it does not exist. But for a yogi, you are going beyond the physical senses, beyond the material plane. So even though you must respect the laws of the material plane and keep the machine healthy, keep the mind concentrated, you must never become distracted by that or begin to become hypnotized by their experiences. The body is a treacherous friend. You must give it its due, nothing more. And then eventually, you don't even feel anything. There's sometimes what I'm trying to say is that eventually, where you may have felt a pain in the knee, a pain in the hip, a pain in the mind, eventually, as you go beyond the mind and body, you're not even going to experience that. You may have an ache here, a pain there, but it's like the other thing that you asked about earlier. You're not identified with it. So the very best is just to give the body and mind their due, nothing more. Do not become stuck at that plane of consciousness. Keep going beyond it. Very soon it will leave you alone.
What is the goal of pranayama?
The goal of pranayama is to unite prana and apana right here at the height of the navel, the Manipura chakra, to withdraw the prana from Ida and Pingala Nadi and place it inside Shushumna Nadi. So as the prana travel up spine, your consciousness will lift correspondingly, you understand. As the prana travels up, very soon your consciousness is going to lift. And then as your consciousness lifts, you're going to see reality more and more clearly. So the yogis have the pranayama techniques. Prana means breath. Yama is control. Control of the breath. Learning that instead of like a mortal person just dissipating prana through all of the gates constantly, you learn to withdraw prana from the psychic channels, primarily the two auxiliary channels, and place it inside the channel that is closed, the one that is blocked to mortals. Inside the spinal column is a tremendous amount of prana, a tremendous amount of shakti or energy. But it is closed to mortals to keep them safe. But as you employ your pranayama practices, the ones prescribed to you by the guru, you're going to purify your psychic channels. As your psychic channels become more purified, then you're going to be able to learn to situate the prana at the base of spine. And then as you learn to situate it there, the fibers that are at the base of spine, microscopic, they're going to begin to become stimulated. As they do, very soon is going to be a break here. Then the prana is going to travel up. That's why your other psychic channels must be purified first, so that you are prepared for the various levels of consciousness that are going to awaken as the prana travel up spine. In the beginning, you'll know if the purification is working, because in the first stage, you begin to perspire tremendously. And of course, you know, you must never wipe the perspiration off. As a yogi, you have to rub it back in. You keep all the perspiration you have. It's like a cold sweat sometimes. You just rub the perspiration back in. Don't dab it with a towel or something else. And then the second stage, you begin to shake. Generally upon the kumbhaka, the retention, generally you shake tremendously. You feel tremor in your Manipura chakra. And that's the second sign that purification is getting very strong. And then eventually you're going to see, once that's happening, then just keep doing what you're doing. Just keep doing the practices you're doing, because you're getting very close. Generally by that time the prana has reached here, the height of the navel. Then keep doing what you're doing. Very soon the prana is going to travel up here, then up here. Then you have to be careful, because when the prana travel up here...
And for those listening, you're at the base of the throat.
Oh, yes.
Now for those
not,
who
but not
see.
Jalandhara Bandha.
But you're at the...
Not the lock, right. At the throat, the height of the throat. But once your consciousness travels from the navel to the heart, to the throat, you become very serious about finding God. When your consciousness reaches the height of the throat, but you must always remember that until the prana reaches here, the third eye, it's always going to be in flux. One day you might be here very serious about spiritual matters, desperately trying to find God, very concentrated. And then all of a sudden you think about how you can get more students or get more money or something, and you all of a sudden back here concerned with name and fame. Then maybe you catch yourself and you think, oh, what am I doing? I have to get serious again. Then you do a little repentance. Then you go back here again. Then the next day maybe you see a pretty girl or a handsome man. Then all of a sudden you're back down here. So as long as the prana is situated between the base of spine and the throat region, it's always in flux, your level of consciousness. Only when you bring the prana through the practice of pranayama, through the specific techniques, to the area known as Trikuti, the space between the eyebrows. Once the prana reaches here, it never goes back down. Never travels back down. The consciousness stays here. Then you see reality. No matter what you're doing, the consciousness stays here. Even if you're doing more worldly activities, it looks like you're moving about in the world. It looks like maybe you're doing something here, doing something here. your consciousness, you have lifted your consciousness to a plane that there's no return from. So the practice of pranayama initially is to unite prana and apana vayu at height of navel, and then eventually to lift your consciousness. This is why the human birth is said to be so rare, and why, even though a cow and a pig have very complex nervous system, almost like a human, still they cannot achieve self-realization because they do not have the ability to withdraw the prana, to manipulate the prana. That's all. That's the sole difference, is to lift your consciousness up through the practices of all of the saints and the gurus. Otherwise, but very soon, next life, maybe they have a human birth, and then they have their turn. So.
You had started to say you were holding Vishuddha, the throat chakra, and said that when you get here that you have to be very careful. Why is that? What were you going to say there?
Well, you have to become careful because unfortunately no matter how sincere you are, one can become very arrogant and about spiritual experiences. You can, as your consciousness lifts, you're going to see God more and more in full force. And then if you do not have a foundation in yama and niyama, or you do not have a measure of humility, maybe as each plane of consciousness is revealed to you, maybe you might think it's you. You're discovering something, you are uncovering something, you become so puffed with pride, so puffed with ego, so intoxicated with spiritual experiences and psychic abilities. And then very soon, you come crashing back down because you believe you are identified with the doer. I am so great. I am creating all of these phenomenal astral experiences, when in reality, no, they are being revealed to you. You see, the science of yoga will work for anyone up to a point. Because yoga is a science, if you apply A to B, you can expect to get C. So anyone can practice. My guru taught me the psychic development treatment, the series of mantra and specific breathings with specific visualization to increase your psychic abilities so that you can be more receptive to the higher planes. But my guru told me explicitly, you must never share this with anyone you do not believe to be sincere, because the techniques work. It does not matter if you do not have a foundation in yama. I'm sure that Mr. Hitler was very concentrated. I'm sure he was very disciplined. So if you have lots of fortitude and concentration, you really have a desire to experience something, to see something in the astral realm, well, you get your hands on all of these very ancient practices, and your determination for control is what's driving you, well, you're going to do your practice very seriously, and lift your consciousness, but with no moral foundation. So suddenly you are using the higher planes of reality you are seeing beyond the material realm for name and fame, for control of others, for manipulation, for any number of things. So you must, I know most students, that's not the route that they take. But believe me when I tell you, it's a slippery slope. You can initially just feel a little puffed with pride, and then before you know it, your much darker qualities begin to take over. So once your consciousness reaches the throat region, just keep watching. Try to be more humble at that time than any other. And keep talking to God. You are my everything. I know nothing. Please just keep guiding me. The scriptures say that arrogance is one of the gateways to suffering. Please do not let me fall. I know you're with me. Then you have real success.
You speak a lot about Ishvara Pranidhana, surrender to God, and place an incredible amount of importance on, as the Gita says, offering the fruits of your actions to God. And you say do everything from asana. Everything is an offering to God. What advice do you have to give to those people for whom the idea of God seems like an abstraction? It doesn't feel real, or they don't have a belief in God. Is yoga, what advice do you give for those people for whom devotion and bhakti is more difficult?
You want the short answer or the long answer?
I'll take the long answer.
Oh, okay. You have to surrender. You have to find a concept or word that does not disturb the mind. Source, nature, creation, energy, God, the Supreme Self, the True Self. All of this is involved in name and form. All of this does not matter. So if you ever have a student that come that says, I don't like it when you say think of God. I don't like it when you say bow before the Lord. I'm not going to bow before anyone. I don't even believe in God. All right, well, do you believe you have a higher self? You believe in the various levels of qualities? You believe certain qualities are higher than others, that it's maybe of a higher moral concentration to be kind to someone than to kick them? Well, then instead, when I say think of God, just think of your highest self. Surrender to your highest self. Surrender to the part of yourself that always chooses the most golden thing, the most sattvic action, or the most sattvic thought. And just keep concentrating on that. Some people don't like the word God. Don't worry about it. So I would begin there. Just find a word or a concept that does not disturb the mind. And then go from there. But the reality is that the deeper you go into spiritual life and spiritual practices, and yoga is a spiritual science. Your belief in God will come. There's no question about it. If you go very deep, God will come very quickly. And to those who are still going to be very stubborn, they want to be challenging, there is no God, I would say, observe your thoughts for 24 hours unremittingly. And then wonder no more at God's absence.
What is a guru mantra for those that don't know? And how is it different from just reading a mantra and beginning to repeat one?
According to the yoga system, it is said that once blessed is to receive human birth, to have human incarnation, which is very rare. Twice blessed is to meet the guru in this lifetime. And three times blessed is to receive mantra from the guru. Then in reality you have everything that you need. There is nothing more. There is no higher practice than the practice of mantra. No higher mantra than a guru mantra. So there is no higher practice than a guru mantra. As your spiritual practice progresses, if you have the very rare fortune to meet the guru who is destined to bring you home, somewhere along your path, depending upon your level of commitment and the qualities that the disciple shows, the guru may decide to accept you. They may decide to accept you as part of a spiritual family and then decide to initiate you into a mantra, a personal mantra, a guru mantra, designed to first to begin to purify the astral body. The guru mantra, based on the syllables that is given to the disciple, specifically for them, from the guru, because the guru sees some astral deficiencies that may be there. And then they prescribe this particular mantra. Then as the disciple repeats the mantra with enthusiasm and concentration, it begins to affect the astral body, beginning to fill in any deficiencies that may be there, beginning to awaken some dormant consciousness that is already there but asleep. But the real purpose, the real beauty behind the mantra and the power behind the guru mantra is that at the time of a mantra initiation, if the guru accepts you and gives you a personal mantra, the guru is not only accepting you into a spiritual family, they are taking responsibility for you. They are taking responsibility for your spiritual progress. They are taking responsibility for your final realization. In other words, to say, you have shown a measure of commitment. You have shown a measure of reverence, you have shown a measure of determination, and you have the qualities of a good student. So if you are willing to work for your own self-realization, then I will work with you. and I will work for you. I will give you a psychic link in the form of a guru mantra that the more you repeat with faith and concentration is not only going to awaken consciousness inside of you, but anytime you need me, I'm going to be right there for you. It does not matter time and space. It does not matter name and form. I drop the body, you drop the body. You just do your mantra, I'll be right there. And this will carry into lifetimes until you achieve your goal. Until you achieve your goal, I'll work for you. But you must do the work. And so really, it is the formal acceptance of a guru accepting a disciple. And nothing will take you faster into self-realization. Nothing will bring you face to face with God as quickly. And it cannot be broken. It's like a spiritual marriage. Like these days people have marriage, but they don't understand the promise that you make. If you make a promise, you make a promise. You promise yourself to someone. Well, of course, the moment that you get married, the mind is going to flip out a little bit because your privacy gets taken away, and then the mind starts fantasizing and doing one thing or another. In a spiritual marriage, you cannot break it just because the mind becomes fickle, just because you become bored with something or unhappy with some qualities. So it is truly in the disciple's best interest never to break from the guru, because no matter how far you go, the guru is never going to break from you. They're never going to break their promise that they have made for your self-realization to guide you home. And so really you're just creating a whole lot of unnecessary work for everyone if you decide to break, because everybody has to come back next time. You understand, like a family.
You give a lot of importance to the guru and the relationship with a guru. What advice do you have for students who find it hard to surrender to the guru and a person? Just wait.
Good luck. Just keep practicing, and if you're a guru, a true guru is never going to seek out disciples. They're never going to try to make disciples or seek out a congregation in some way. So really, it's entirely up to the disciple. If they do not feel comfortable following the guidance of a preceptor, then they don't have to, because no guru is going to come chasing after you. Listen to what I'm saying. Don't you want what I'm trying to give you? They're just going to leave you alone. A guru is never going to disturb the free will of the student. If they are having a hard time surrendering, then I would just say, be patient and just keep practicing. And keep going inside the cave of your heart. Keep trying to talk to God. And you have to pray for strength and pray for faith. Very soon the ego will begin to chip away a little bit. You begin to feel some softness. And then once the tears start to come, then you get very close. And then you're ready. You become spiritually fit. The yogic path is not an easy one. It's not for most people. There are certain qualities that you must have before you meet the guru. There are certain qualities that must be present already. A strong desire for liberation, intense faith, the arrogance, the ego, the cravings and desires, the inability to concentrate, the inability to have fortitude, all of that will come. The guru can assist you in that way. But there must be certain qualities already present. And so it's a very great responsibility to accept someone as your guru. It's a spiritual marriage, as we said earlier. And so it's good if you take your time, because once you are ready, there's no going back. There's nothing you can do any longer. You might decide to get a bright idea, break away or do something, but that's only going to hurt you. So just be patient. Very soon you begin to develop tremendous faith, and then you're going to hear the guru talk to you, generally in your dreams, because in dream sleep you are more receptive initially. And then you just have to surrender. Don't worry about it until then. Just keep doing your practice.
For those students who are working with a spiritual teacher and who may find themselves coming to places in their path where they feel disillusioned or even disappointed by their guru, and may find themselves getting this feeling of jadedness or cynicism, what advice do you have for those people?
I have a few things to say about this. It's not just one answer. The first is that the mind is never to be trusted. You must never believe whatever the mind is telling you. You make a commitment to something, you make a promise to someone or something, and then everything is going very nice. And then suddenly, the fickle nature of the mind, the fickle nature of ego personality and lower self, does not appreciate the intensity of concentration and begins to find fault. Begins to find fault with the guru's teachings, begins to find fault with sometimes even the science of yoga. But generally, no. Generally, what happens is they find fault with the individual, not with the science. And so what they do is they tend to seek out, it's very subtle, they tend to seek out teachers that different teachers that use more flowery language. That's going to not be so, not hold such a mirror up to the ego. And so, of course, it appears like they're still practicing. It appears like they were the one that had a reality, saw some reality, or had a vision, or had a realization. They were the ones employing intelligence, made that choice, and then made a wise decision. And so, but in reality, no, you're just putting a stop to everything, a pause, hitting the pause button. So my first piece of advice is the mind is never to be trusted, so you better be very careful. And the moment that you begin to find fault with the guru, you're in big trouble. Big trouble. It's nothing but a downward spiral from there. And it may not appear that way in the beginning, but it's very soon going to show you how your lack of respect, your lack of faith, your lack of belief, where it's going to take you ultimately. Because you could not employ a little bit of humility, you're willing to suffer life's countless humiliations in the material plane. That's the first thing. Watch out for the mind. Do not trust it. The second thing is this. I was with my guru at Yogaville, and he was giving an interview to Premanjali. And inside of that interview, she asked him a question about his guru, and they were talking about it. And my guru said, which I've heard him say many times, my guru to me was better than God. Was not only the representative of God, as all gurus are, but to me, my guru was better than God. Even today, he said, if I walked out this door right now, then I saw my guru out on the street, he had become a pimp, I would go over and kiss his feet. Because you are in no position. This is me talking now, that part's over, the quoting of my guru. You are in no position to judge a saint. A guru is a representative of God, someone who has willingly relinquished the personal self to allow God to pass through them. That means that they have lifted their consciousness all the way up to the third eye, the crown of the head, full force. This means that whatever you see them doing, don't even worry about. In the scriptures it says you must never judge the actions of a saint. It may appear like they're doing something for name or for fame or something that does not make sense to your material mind. But they may be on a divine mission. It may look like maybe the guru realizes, well, we have to get this killing of animals under control now. This is getting out of control. It's too much. I'm going to run for governor. I'm going to run for governor so I can pass a law in the state, no more meat eating. Or maybe just so that all the people see the governor with the yoga mat practicing and then decide to follow the governor and do yoga. You never know. There are countless examples of saints doing practices and in taking action in ways that the disciples or the followers or the town people did not understand at the time. You must never judge the actions of a saint. If a saint were clear to you, you would be one already. So you must be very, your faith must be absolute. No matter what the guru is doing, you don't judge it. You just, I don't understand what's going on. They must be doing something that I cannot see yet or something. But my faith in that individual is absolute. The other thing is that it's a terribly arrogant to, when you understand what a guru has taken on for you, that a guru takes on all of your nonsense. Some disciples prove very troublesome. They require a lot of work because they're always stirring up trouble. But still, maybe the guru takes them on, agrees to, because of the vows they have taken to serve humanity, help any sincere student. The student appears sincere. They make all kinds of pranams and whatnot. And then the moment something happens that their mind does not like, they run, they leave. That's a horrible thing. Someone has not only promised to love you unconditionally, but they promise to love you unconditionally, lifetime after lifetime, eternally, until you achieve liberation. And because your mind gets unhappy with one or two actions in the material plane, you turn your back on that kind of love, on that kind of promise. That's something, isn't it? That's the height of arrogance, the height of Maya, illusion. You know, a guru is a representative of God. They have given their life for the ideals of the divine. And given their life to carry others forward. But a guru is still subject to prakriti. And a guru also still has their prarabdha karma, the karma from the past. All of the saints and sages all had their own internal turmoil, all had their own karma they are passing through. Even after liberation, there is a story, an autobiography of a yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, where he describes his first meeting with his guru, Sri Yukteswar. And inside of that meeting, Paramahansa Yogananda is so grateful to meet Sri Yukteswar, to finally be home, to finally find his guru, and he's overcome with happiness and excitement and enthusiasm. And he says to Sri Yukteswar, "Do you promise to bring me to the goal? You promise you're going to help me and take care of me? I'll be a good student. You promise you're going to help me achieve liberation?" And Sri Yukteswar says, "I promise. If that's what you want, I promise. Do you promise that if you ever see me falling from my concentration on the divine which we both worship, that you'll take my head and put it in your lap? Promise to bring me back to the divine that we both worship?" It's very funny how, and of course Yogananda says, I promise. And he did. It's very funny how the kind of personality that would take so much from someone so willing, like a saint or a guru. And then the moment that the guru is maybe passing through something, not because of the human qualities, you understand? You could not be there for the guru. You could not be there to put their head in your lap, to have more unconditional love for one that has given you so much. I pray I never experience anything like that. I cannot imagine a more grievous act. As a yogi, you understand, to turn your back on the guru. There's many times I saw my guru. My guru is fully illumined. There's no doubt about it in my mind. I have seen my guru pass through many things. I have seen him at times when he was tired, because the machine, I knew inside he did not feel it, but the machine. I have seen him at times when maybe he was a little short of temper, or maybe one thing or another, you understand? I've even seen him apologize to people if he ever thought he did something, you spoke too harsh or made an error or something. I never imagine. Every time I ever see anything like that, I always think, Guruji, you are entitled. You have nothing to apologize for ever. Even in what appear as your errors, you're still probably trying to teach me something. And that's the other thing. You don't know. You never know. Maybe the guru is testing you, testing your faith. Maybe they're out there as a pimp on the street. Maybe not really. Maybe just three or four female and male disciples playing dress up, just to test you when you come out of the building, to see if you're going to abandon your promise or if you're going to have intense faith. You never know. So, that's all.
For more information on Chandra Om, please visit nc schoolofyoga.com. Om Shanti Om.